we want to welcome to the show, our monthly visit. We always have such a great time with Tom Appel. He is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can check out the website at consumerguide.com. And you can follow Tom on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. That's car_guy_Tom. And we are going to be talking about cars and answering your questions at 312-981-7200. We welcome Tom to the show. Hi, Tom.
Hi, good morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. So listen, before we get into some of the stories and answer the questions that people have, you went to the Detroit Auto Show.
Yes.
Yeah. Tell me about that. What'd you see? What'd you like?
This was a great show for a number of reasons, but primarily because it was just big, important stuff.
And okay.
It was like an old school auto show. We went through the recession. We went through the electric car stuff. There's all sorts of things that have happened. But this year it was just big stuff. There was a brand new Nissan Rogue. There was a big Chevy Traverse, a new GMC Terrain. The stuff people buy. It was just meaningful, hard product. It was kind of fun.
Now, was that obviously that was on purpose, correct?
As much as manufacturers work together, it was. Yeah, Detroit is becoming sort of the big show early in the year. I think New York. And I think L.A. may be slipping a little bit in importance. But, yeah, I think so.
How many people do they have in Detroit? Massive crowds, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's big crowds. It's the biggest press event auto show, too. There's a bunch of reveals. I don't know because no one talks about the numbers anymore. Chicago used to claim about 1 million people came through the show. That might be a little high these days, but it's right around there. And I think Detroit probably gets at least 500,000.
Mm, okay.
Yeah, it's a big event.
What stood out for you? What were the things that you thought were highlights that were awesome?
It's this crazy move to crossovers, and it was so clear there that Chevy and GMC have taken their midsize crossovers. They're making them a little bit smaller. They're making their big ones a little smaller because they're going to put other vehicles on top eventually. So everyone's betting heavy on crossovers because cars are suddenly the thing people don't buy. And this was just such a big year for that. We may have talked about this before, but the Toyota RAV4, which is Toyota's compact crossover,
yeah,
outsold the Camry several months in 2016. No one would have even seen that coming a couple of years ago.
The RAV4s are everywhere, Tom.
They're everywhere.
I see them everywhere.
Yeah, it's going to become the most popular car, most popular vehicle in the U.S. in a year or two.
Wow. Anything else at the that you would like to mention at the Detroit Auto Show? Stuff that we're going to get to see next month?
Oh, geez, what's coming that we're going to see? I'm really excited about the new Chevy. This is just because I'm a marketing geek, but I'm excited about the Chevy Equinox, which is Chevy's compact crossover. General Motors has been just a little bit behind step in the crossover thing, but not anymore. But I think that this is going to be as big as the RAV4 or the CR-V from Honda. It's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. How long does the Detroit Auto Show, was it 3 days or is it a week? How long does it go?
It's a little bit like Chicago. There's 2 or 3 days of press events before it opens, and they have a charity ball just like we do here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And then it opens up for just over, now what is it, a week and a half, because it's 2 weekends.
Right.
Essentially. In Chicago, they're going to do the same thing, but then they're going to stay open the following Monday for President's Day.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, so one more day this year.
And again, I usually ask you this when we hit upon auto show time. Do people still get the big plastic bags and fill them with the pamphlets? Does that still happen?
For as much as there, yes, it does happen, but there are fewer and fewer pamphlets and brochures anymore.
Okay.
Yeah, they're a little bit expensive. And what they do is they have the little QR code so people can use their smartphones to find the digital brochures, which
right,
is a much more cost effective way to do that.
Right.
And that's a shame, because when I was a kid, I came home with 8 pounds of brochures.
I know, me too. We'd go to the auto show, and we'd come back with 3 shopping bags full of brochures and just look through them and go, oh, I'd like to have that, or, you know.
And the cruel truth is my father threw them all away.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. I can't find them, so they're gone.
Oh, man. Oh, that would be so cool to find and take a look. I'm sure my parents probably tossed them, too.
Yeah, yeah. And they've got some value now, too.
They do?
Yeah, if you have some time, you can get rid of them on eBay.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. All right. Well, listen, Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
We come back, we got some news stories to talk about, some follow-up, so pretty big stories to follow up on that we've been talking about here for a long time on the show. And our phone lines are open, our text lines are open. Any and all automotive or car related questions, you're looking to buy or lease a car, you got some serious questions, any of that kind of stuff, you need advice. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Hi. Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in for that. You program the bumps on the show. Today, one artist, two songs. Get them in there, 312-981-7200. That is the same phone number and text number that you should use right now to ask Tom Appel a question, 312-981-7200. Tom is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive and a contributor to their Daily Drive blog. We have him on once a month to talk all things car and automotive related and to answer your questions. So let's welcome Tom back to the show. Welcome back, Tom.
Thank you.
All right, a couple of follow-up stories to stuff that we've been following here and have made the news. First, the Takata airbag. They have to pay $1 billion.
Yeah, that's a $1 billion with a B, the big number.
Wow.
And that is part of a Department of Justice criminal probe into the activities of Takata. And it's been determined that Takata had some elements of Takata's management were aware that these problems existed and either soft-selled them or didn't fully admit to what those problems were. Because originally we all believed, and I think this is still accurate to a degree, that the problem was worse in or almost exclusively limited to warmer and more humid climates. And while that tended to be true, that was not the trigger for the event. That was simply making it worse. It had something to do with the metal shielding around the inflator reacting to the ammonium nitrate, which is the actual fuel that propelled the bag out. And that's in everything, and that affected all of them. It was just worse in those situations.
What was the actual, to remind everybody, what were the actual problems that happened?
Yeah, there's actually a metal case, in this case it was steel, or a steel alloy, that was around the actual inflator module. That's supposed to pop out of the way during the explosion to allow the propellant to inflate the bag. What was happening, however, is that the metal inflator case was starting to corrode or rust, and it would shatter instead of bounce out of the way, and those metal shards would enter the cabin and, unfortunately, enter passengers in the vehicle. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it killed a few people. It injured a lot of people over time, and, yeah, it's just crazy. It's a crazy situation. Those recalls are still taking place.
$1 billion. And what were the kind, what, I mean, you know, and this isn't just one kind of car. There were several different kind of makes and cars and that would carry these airbags.
Yeah, it's an astonishing, almost every manufacturer was touched in some way. The most damaged manufacturer was Honda, which has had 11 million airbags be recalled so far. But American makers were hit pretty hard, too. Ford was hit pretty bad. Toyota was hit pretty bad. Most Asian manufacturers took it really hard. Ford's the U.S. maker that took it the worst.
Okay. And then the money that we're talking about here, the $1 billion, it includes a $25 million criminal penalty.
Yes.
$850 million in restitution to automakers who purchased the airbags. Another $125 million that's going to go across to compensation to those who were harmed by the malfunctioning bags.
Yeah, which actually kind of seems like a small pool for the victims, but that number may grow, or maybe they're obliged to take care of other victims as they come to light.
Yeah, that's true, because I mean the difference between what they're paying the automakers and what they're paying the victims is huge.
Yeah, because it works out to about $1 million a victim, which seems low in the case of criminal death settlements. So we'll see where that goes.
Okay,
I don't know if that's a final decision.
Okay, and so the company itself, Takata, done?
I think Takata's done, yeah. It's being propped up by manufacturers right now anyway because they need the product that they produce and there isn't another company in line. The crazy thing about the auto industry, and it's a fairly efficient industry, and there isn't like a company that can just step in and start producing something. There wasn't an available factory, so Takata needs to keep running or we won't have cars to buy. But at some point, I think Takata's going to see itself just bought out by new management and just start over.
Okay. All right, another huge one and more news this week. Tom, of course, the VW recall, $4.3 billion in a criminal settlement.
Yeah, it's hard to keep track of how much money Volkswagen is paying.
It's crazy.
In the U.S. And I don't know that we all understood that the criminal side of this investigation also existed. We saw the civil case, and that involved buying back of all the cars and restitution to American diesel car owners,
right,
and some other penalties on the civil side. This is the criminal side. This is the Department of Justice. This isn't, you know, the EPA or any of those organizations. Yeah, so that's another $4 billion for criminal activity. But the interesting part of this, and I think that this is the most telling part, is that so far six VW executives have been indicted. There are people here who may go to jail.
Yeah, and I read this piece, and it's kind of astonishing that the level of alternative facts that were said during this about you know that these guys knew, like the top guys in Volkswagen. Well, you know, allegedly, because of this investigation, people are finding out. They're finding out that these top guys knew about it and lied.
Yeah, it's so hard to believe anything other than that. These are major systems on a vehicle that have to be approved and reapproved, and there's so much cross-checking. I mean, it just seems impossible to me that it didn't go fairly high up the tree.
Yeah.
It had to.
And the way they were saying that it was just like a handful of employees or workers or rogue workers were involved. I mean, that obviously, as you just said, Tom, obviously that can't be true.
No, they're just trying to contain the disaster. And I don't know. I think that the most interesting part of this is yet to come.
Yeah. And what do you think is going to happen?
I think someone's going to spend time in jail, and it'll be interesting to see too, because we're talking about the highest ranking people in the U.S. But I would think that the most liable people, the people who made the decisions, are in Germany, and I sincerely doubt that Germany will allow extradition of people here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a couple of people are going to get burned in the U.S. who may not have been as responsible as they
right.
Yes, they could have been.
Right, and the investigation continues.
It does.
And it won't stop. And this is right now we're at the latest is $4.3 billion to add to all the money that VW had to give out.
Yeah, just in the U.S. now, Volkswagen's at about $20 billion.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and there's still some outstanding settlements that have to do with the much smaller volume V6 diesels that were in their Volkswagen, Audi, and Bentley products.
Wow.
So we'll see what comes of that. But that's a much smaller volume thing.
Yeah, what a nightmare.
Yeah,
what a nightmare. Unbelievable.
It's crazy.
It is. Okay, Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
All right, we got more car and automotive news to talk about. Plus, we'll take your questions. Call or text right now at 312-981-7200. Tom is here to answer any and all of your car questions. Okay, we'll take a break. The news is coming up next. All right. Hey, hi, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Welcome back to the show. It is Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in, one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Start texting those things in right now for your requests. We'll do it a little bit later on. We are going to be talking about classic old wives' tales that are both true and not true, and that'll be coming up. We'll have another round of pop-up video later in the show as well. But right now, Tom Appel is with us. Tom is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, contributor to the Daily Drive blog, and joins us once a month to talk any and all car-related issues, news, and to take your questions and your needs at 312-981-7200. And let's welcome Tom back to the show. Hey, Tom.
Hey.
All right. So one more follow-up story. This one doesn't involve a company having to dish out money.
Well, that's nice.
It's Tesla. The autopilot had no safety defects in the fatality, and that's after the investigation. Tell everybody a little background on this one.
Yeah, back in May, a Tesla Model S, which is Tesla's big sedan, sort of their breakthrough car. That's the big car that'll go up almost 300 miles when properly equipped on an electrical charge. A particular example, equipped with the company's autopilot system, we'll get to that name in a second, was involved in a fatal accident when a truck turned in front of the Tesla, and the Tesla failed to recognize the vehicle as a threat and didn't stop.
Mm.
So what had happened is the government investigated the accident, and they did determine that the autopilot system did not act, there was no flaws in the autopilot system, which is a very strange finding because the autopilot system was never really designed to do what the driver was doing.
Yeah.
And this brings us to all sorts of very interesting issues about Tesla. Why are they calling this autopilot when you're not supposed to ever take your hands off of the wheel? It's not really designed to do anything like this. It is and it's not. Most of the equipment is there for this vehicle to be autonomous, but the laws aren't in place, and it shouldn't have been acted that way. But as it turns out, the systems that were there worked just fine.
So Tesla's not under – are they under any – is there a way for them to stop calling it autopilot?
They should do that, and Consumer Reports has rather famously called them out on this, and they want Tesla to call the system something else, especially because it's a standalone feature that you purchase. So it seems like what they're selling you is hands-free autonomous driving, and it's really not that. Though if you go to YouTube, you'll find countless examples of people doing just that. And it works very well, actually, mm-hmm. given the fact that it's working by itself. There's no other cars involved, no infrastructure.
Okay.
But, yeah, people should not be doing this in their Teslas.
Okay. All right. Well, that was just another follow-up on the latest really big stories in the news concerning cars. If you have a question, please, 312-981-7200. We got some texts coming in, Tom.
Okay.
Paul says, will Holden of Australia still be producing cars after GM stops affiliation in 2017?
No, this is sad. For people who know what's going on in Australia, the Australian auto market has always been wonderful because it's been small and completely unto itself, and they've been making great, strange-looking cars. If people have ever seen Mad Max, you know, like, what are these cars? They're strange. I don't recognize them.
Yeah.
And they were cool Australian rear-drive V8-powered mid-sized cars. They're all awesome. But sadly, the Australian auto industry has collapsed into itself, and they import all of their cars now. Holden, General Motors' Australian division, will be the last company to produce a vehicle in Australia. And that happens. It either happened or it's happening now.
Oh, that's pretty, yeah. That's sad. 773 area code says, I was watching a Chevy commercial, and they dropped a bunch of rocks into the flatbed of one of those Fords made with aluminum. The rocks cracked and split the bed. I thought the aluminum was supposed to be stronger than steel or something like that.
Yeah, that's a really interesting commercial, and it's very dramatic if you've seen it, and you can watch it on YouTube. I don't know that that tells a story or it's not, because it's very strange that that bed wasn't lined with something. If you're going to be dropping cinder blocks into your truck, generally you have a bed liner anyway.
Yeah.
It doesn't indicate any lack of strength, although the puncturing, I guess, is a very dramatic visual, and it probably shouldn't do that. I'm not inclined to give that too much weight. I haven't heard any other complaints about the aluminum, actually.
Okay. 708 area code says, is the Ford Bronco really coming back? It's always been an Internet April Fool's Day joke.
Yeah, it has, but no, the Ford Bronco is really coming back.
Oh, it is. It really is, yes.
Yeah, this is kind of exciting, and it may actually be a two-door vehicle, which would be great. I'd love to see another two-door SUV, which we haven't seen in years, but it's going to be based on the Ford Ranger, which is coming back a little bit sooner. So, okay. Yeah, it's going to be built in America. That'll make Donald Trump very happy.
Yeah.
But it'll be built here. It'll be based on the Ranger, and it should be a nice mid-size, largish size.
Okay. Now, where did this Internet April Fool's Day joke originate? Do you know?
Yeah, I've seen pictures, and I think people like to draw. If you remember the movie, Burt Reynolds and the River. What was that movie called?
Deliverance.
Deliverance,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
They drive a beautiful Bronco in that movie.
Mm.
And that's sort of the Bronco that everyone remembers fondly. Later, they did a much bigger Bronco based on the F-150, a little less charming. But people always draw a modern take on that Burt Reynolds vehicle. just because it's cool.
Right.
But now, yeah, it might actually be coming back.
Wow. Burt Reynolds drove a lot of cool cars.
Yes, he did.
A lot of in different movies, like really awesome cars.
Yeah. Obviously, the Bandit, if you're a kid, you love the Bandit.
I remember really loving the car that he drove. First of all, he drove a really, and I can't remember what kind of car it was, but a pretty kick-ass car at the beginning of The Longest Yard.
I don't know what that was.
You go back and watch, like, the first 15 minutes of The Longest Yard. He's drunk, and he slaps his girlfriend and then leaves and takes her car and goes on. He's drunk, and he goes on a drunken joyride, and the cops get him, and that's when he gets arrested. But the car was really great.
Okay, it was a Citroën SM.
Oh, okay. Do you know anything about those?
Yeah, it's a French luxury car. They're incredibly weird, impossible to maintain, and utterly beautiful.
Yeah, there was. I remember vividly, even as a kid, when I saw that movie, I'm like, man, that is one of the coolest cars I've ever seen.
Yeah, those are awesome. They're beloved. Beloved by the French and sort of hated by mechanics.
Okay. See, Kevin from Iowa says, will rotating my tires significantly extend their life?
If you have a front-wheel drive car, you should probably be very careful about your rotation. And most people have front-wheel drive cars. Yeah, because what happens is the front wheels are doing all the driving and the pulling and the steering. That's a lot of wear. And the ones in back aren't doing squat.
Okay.
But, yeah, you should follow the rotation recommendations.
630 area code says, what is Ford bringing to the Chicago Auto Show next month?
I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea what anyone's bringing to the Chicago Auto Show. They're being very tight-lipped.
Okay. All right. Well, you got to. When does it start again, Tim?
That is the 11th. February 11th is Saturday, and that is the first public day of the
first public day is February 11th. Okay.
Uh-huh.
I will keep you posted. Well, George seems to. Hey, George, you were listening. You had a possible answer for what we were talking about.
Yeah, guys. Hey, how you doing? It was a Citroen Maserati.
Yeah.
That he was driving.
Yeah, at the beginning of the Longest Yard.
Yeah, beautiful car. Air suspension on that thing. I mean, it was awesome vehicle. Tremendous. Yeah.
He always drove cool cars, man. He always.
He was just at the Barrett Jackson wheeling out another one of the Firebirds from from whatever that what was that movie? Smokey and the Bandit.
Smokey and the Bandit. Yeah.
Yeah, and they signed it everywhere. It's kind of a mess inside the car. I don't know if I'd want his signature all over the place, but yeah, it was. It's kind of cool. But yeah, anyway, that was a great vehicle he drove in that.
Okay, thank you, George.
See ya.
Yeah. All right, there you go. I don't know if you remember the movie, Tom. You remember the movie White Lightning?
I do.
He also had a cool ass car in that too, and I remember it was white. And there was a great scene in White Lightning. I think if I remember correctly, Ned Beatty played the bad sheriff, the evil sheriff. And there's like a big car chase, and there's one car chase in the movie. Yeah, like you can only have one car chase in a Burt Reynolds movie. Anyway, he ends up like getting him out on this back road, and then it leads to this like lake, and he parks the car on an angle, below a hill that leads right into the lake. And then I remember Ned Beatty's car, police car, goes flying over the car and into the lake. And that's, I think, how Ned Beatty dies in the movie. But I just remember Burt Reynolds' car in White Lightning was fantastic.
It looks like, I'm looking at pictures here, and it looks like an LTD, but I don't think that's the only car in there.
Oh, okay.
But it looks like Ned Beatty also chased that car. And it seems like Ned Beatty comes to horrible ends in Burt Reynolds' movies.
Yeah, he doesn't have good luck in Burt Reynolds' movies, no. Okay, Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
All right, Tom Appel is here. We've got more stuff to talk about car-related, and if you have a question, it's 312-981-7200, talk or text. We got some news stories to talk about, and he writes for the blog for the CG DailyDrive.com, and he wrote some really great stuff for the blog. We want to get to that, especially something that involves Star Trek II, because Tom, by the way, is a maniacal Star Trek fan, and he wrote this great piece, and he kind of surrounded it around Star Trek too, and it makes sense. So we'll get to that too as well. How you doing, everybody? Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, and 6 o'clock your morning drive begins with the great Steve Cochran. Tom Appel joins us every month. He is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive and a contributor to their Daily Drive blog. Check out consumerguide.com. And you can follow Tom on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. That's car_guy_Tom. And you can follow him on Twitter. He joins us every month to talk all things automotive related. And we welcome Tom back to the show. Welcome back, Tom.
Thank you.
All right. We have a call here. Jimmy is in Lamont on WGN. Hey, Jimmy.
Yes, how are you?
All right.
Okay, the question I have is, I'm a Prius. Approximately how many miles can I get on a hybrid battery?
That's a great question, and the answer is sort of up in the air.
I forgot to tell you the number.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Tom. Give him a roundabout way there.
Yeah, there's some interesting rules, and I've talked to some Nissan engineers about this recently, and it seems that after 5 years, the battery of a Nissan Leaf will have lost about 10% of its electric storage capacity, roughly. And that's the same lithium-ion construction that a hybrid battery has. Now, hybrids actually tax their batteries a little bit than electric cars, And I know that all those cabs that are running around Chicago that are old Camry hybrids and even Altima hybrids, they're all still working in hybrid form, despite the fact that they're at 150,000, 200,000 miles. So it seems like in most cases, a hybrid car's battery will go the life of the car.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the as long as you own the car, the battery's going to be there.
Yeah, there might be some diminishment in the battery's capacity and thus a little bit diminishment in overall fuel economy, but it's not dramatic. They seem to go the distance.
Okay. All right. Jimmy, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200. We got another text here, Tom.
All right.
630 area code says, I don't want a minivan, but the crossovers I've test driven just don't have enough room. Is there anything else I can check out?
Yeah, if you want a big crossover that's minivan-like, there's still the Buick Enclave, which is a borderline a large crossover, but it's still a crossover. It's still a front-wheel drive vehicle or all-wheel drive vehicle, and that's a great way to go. Also, the Chevy Traverse, which is in the process of being replaced, that's still very large as well. I think those are great ways to go. There's still the Ford Flex that's out there, kind of forgotten, but there are larger crossovers. Also, the new Mazda CX-9, not a bad thing to look at.
Okay. Let's see. Before we get to a couple of the stories, from your CG Daily Drive, Tom, you picked the 10 slowest cars of 1973 and the 10 fastest cars of 1973.
Yes.
Well, you went back to 73 on that one. What was it about that? You were just looking through the yearbooks and going, oh, wow, look at this.
Yeah, one of the greatest things in my office is this collection of ancient Consumer Guide monthly magazines.
Yeah.
And they smell like old National Geographics, and the paper's all yellow, and I love them.
Yeah.
One of the things that's in there are these great old test results. And the funny thing about them, too, is that Consumer Guide didn't test everything. So there's sort of an eclectic mix of cars at the top and bottom of the scale. And I love that for the small... They actually tested a bunch of small vans in 1973, and among them were the VW bus,
yeah,
which was just a dog. So when I saw that, I'm like, I got to write about this.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Now, I will say this, you know, the VW bus is faster than the VW Beetle.
Yes, that surprised me, actually.
Yeah, it would surprise me, too, you know.
I have driven both, and I thought the bus was the worst thing I ever drove.
Oh, by the way, we forgot to ask you, what are you driving now?
Oh, I am in this is exciting. I'm in the 2017 Honda CR-V, which was redesigned for 2017, and I love it. Yeah.
Okay.
That's a compact crossover, and it's roomy. It handles well. It rides well. The engine's noisy, kind of bumming me out there. But otherwise, this is the touring example, the fully loaded touring example. Mm-hmm. Very nice vehicle.
And what else have you driven in the past month since we've talked?
I just drove, because I drive strange stuff. I just drove the Mercedes-Benz Metris, which is Mercedes-Benz commercial midsize van. No back seat, just a big empty hollow steel box. I actually enjoyed that very much.
Did you really?
Yeah. It's funny because there's still, you know, Mercedes-Benz makes great cars, and this is kind of for small utility vans, this actually rode and handled pretty well. I think there's some element of it. Like, wow, I guess this is a Mercedes.
Oh, wow. All right. Hey, by the way, callers are calling in and saying that the Deliverance vehicle was an International Harvester Scout, not a Bronco.
I'm not sure that's right.
Okay.
I've got to check now. It could be. They were very similar-looking vehicles.
Yeah.
But I was distinctly sure that it was a Bronco with a 302, because I actually remember the badge.
Give me another...
I could be wrong. I haven't seen Deliverance in years.
I was going to say, I'd give you another reason to watch a great movie.
Yeah, I love that movie.
I do, too. It's fantastic. Okay, speaking of movies, Tom.
Yes?
You wrote an entire piece around Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, the Kobayashi Maru.
Yeah, this is how you know my boss doesn't pay attention to what I do.
Talk about this. Tell everybody about this. I loved it. By the way, you were at my screening of Star Trek II.
I was. That's actually the last time I've seen Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, me too.
Which is an awesome movie.
Yes.
For people who don't know, the Kobayashi Maru was this test presented to Starfleet Academy cadets to test their character. It was a no-win scenario. They were presented with a choice of saving people and almost certainly dying or not saving them. And, of course, you know, the Starfleet officers are going to go in there and save people, and they have to deal with the fact that it's a Romulan trap.
But and by the way, and this is how the movie opens, by the way.
Yes, it's fantastic.
Yes.
But it turns out to be, as is famously referred to a number of times in the movie, a no-win scenario.
Right.
I mention this because electric cars, EVs, not electric cars, I'm sorry, autonomous cars, are going to be, at some point, put in a position to make a decision about who lives or dies. This is based on a wonderful paper that came out of MIT called "We'll Have to Teach Electric Cars How to Kill." And, it's crazy, but it's true. A decision is going to have to be made at some point when there's a horrible accident about to happen about where an electric car is going to land. And that's a thing that not a lot of people have thought about yet. And there's all sorts of complicated related issues. What happens to insurance? What happens to the law? Who's liable? Were the circumstances so dire that really you should have been driving, not leaving the driving to a car? And this is why I believe that true autonomous driving is really far in the future.
Yeah.
There's so many things we haven't done yet. Insurance companies haven't checked in. Most states have no laws about this whatsoever.
Right.
And the technology may be getting close, but I argue society is not.
Okay. All right. I just love the fact that you threw that Star Trek II in there. That was just fantastic, Tom.
Yeah, someone actually asked me how long I've been waiting to use Kobayashi Maru in a blog post.
All right, and then on a similar note, there was a story about how the feds want all cars to talk to each other.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, that is something that we're waiting for. It's going to take forever, but it's called V2V, vehicle-to-vehicle communication. And last year, Mercedes-Benz, at the launch of the E-Class, which is their midsize sedan, introduced the first vehicle ever to have the standard by which, and this is very Bluetooth-like, it's a protocol for that communication, those vehicles have it. Now, if you play these numbers out, Americans buy about 17 million cars a year, and there's 270,000 or 260 million vehicles in America. You're looking at 15 years once every car has this to replace the entire fleet. So we are just so far away from vehicles having this protocol that would vastly improve the state of safety in autonomous vehicles.
And there were also concerns about privacy issues and other technological problems that could arise with this that have been thought about, and also with the Trump administration coming in, how much they would dedicate to this.
Yeah, that's a great question, because one of the other components is infrastructure.
Right.
Railroad lights, traffic lights, emergency equipment coming by. Cars need to know about this stuff, and if these things aren't ready to communicate with the cars and the traffic, then we're just not ready. But yeah, V2V communication does feel like one of those portals for hacking.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a concern with anything nowadays. You know what I mean? Because hacking is just so ubiquitous; it's everywhere.
Yeah, and then you would end up with an open source language that people can use to communicate between cars. That actually feels compromisable.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think there's a lot of concern about that. There should be.
Yeah, I think it's justified.
Okay. All right. Well, by the way, if you want to read any of these articles we were talking about, the slowest cars of 73, the fastest cars of 73, the best-selling cars of last year and the five worst, and the autonomous car Star Trek piece, they're all up at cgdrivedaily.com, and you can go to consumerguide.com to read anything. Tom, we thank you for by the way, you can follow him at car_guy_Tom. Tom, always a pleasure to talk to you. It's always a lot of fun, and we'll talk to you next month.
Yeah, the pleasure is all mine. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Tom. The great Tom Appel from Consumer Guide Automotive. He's just the best and answers all of your questions. And we'll have him on again next month for his monthly visit. But in the meantime, you can go to consumerguide.com to read his stuff. All right. We got a break. The news is coming up next.